Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Adriano Zago. Adriano is a biodynamic consultant working mainly in Tuscany. Welcome, Adriano.
Welcome to everybody.
Now, Adriano, just to start, how did you get into what you do now? Were your family farmers? You come from a farming background? Did you used to go gardening when you were a kid? How did you start?
Yeah, actually not at all, because my family was not in this business. And I studied as agronomist and a winemaker. And I start with a conventional agriculture. And I discovered very soon that it was not my cup of tea. And so I was quite lucky at those time, because
When was this? How old were you?
I was kind of 15 years ago.
Okay, so you were when were you born?
I born in 77, then in 41. Young. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, you're very young. You look like you're about 15.
Oh,
it's all that biodynamic food
on,
you
thank
eat.
Thank you.
There you go.
Come on. And so I discovered, visiting some estate, that was something really touching for me on this estate. And after that, I discovered it was a biodynamic farm. And so little by little...
So where was this biodynamic farm and what was it called?
One was, you know, very nice one. Was Castello di Rampolla in Panzani in Chianti.
Mm-hmm. So a very, very well-known Chianti Classico estate.
Absolutely. One of the pioneers in the real practice biodynamic viticulture and agriculture even.
So did you go there specifically to work or did you go there because you were curious about biodynamics?
I was curious. First of all, I was curious. And after some years, we get in France and they ask it to work with them, to share with them some experience that I had in France, in New Zealand, in India. And so we start, and we spend three lovely, really lovely years together.
Okay, at Castello di Rampolla.
Yeah.
So which year was that in that 3-year period working with them?
It was between 10 and 15 years ago.
So that was you were actually paid as a vineyard worker or as a consultant?
No, I start as a vineyard worker and a vineyard, manager.
Because you're an agronomist as well, right?
Yes, I'm an agronomist first of all, and after also winemaker. I studied for both.
So you're both an oenologist. So both you're an agronomist and an oenologist, yeah. Which is quite rare, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm really, I feel really lucky about that, because when you're talking about wine, I can really understand what's happening on the soil, and I can also discuss with people and managing also other crops, vegetables, fruits, and I work also on these crops. And for me, it's a huge challenge, and I'm really honored to you to work with a farmer that's grow vines, fruit, vegetable, wheat, and all sort of crops.
So wheat, olives,
absolutely.
Cereal
crops. Yeah.
So basically, you're an agronomist, you're a viticulturalist. You're a biodynamic expert.
Yeah.
And you're an oenologist.
Yeah, that's...
Anything else? You're champion, world champion skier?
No way. But listen, for me, in my vision, it's quite normal to be that if you want to really apply biodynamic. Because if I take to you one example as a doctor, if you visit one homeopathic doctor, he's first of all a doctor and supposed to be a good one. And after that, it's even a specialist in homeopathic. And for me to be a homeopathic specialist, a biodynamic, finally, specialist, it's necessary to be at least an agronomist and even a winemaker.
Right, so you can join the dots between the grape growing, yeah, and the grape processing.
Yeah.
So that is what makes you very unusual in the world of wine. Trust me, folks.
All right.
There are very few.
I didn't know that.
No, it's true. There are very few people like Adriano who has the technical knowledge as well as obviously the passion for biodynamics. So Castello di Rampolla, you were working there and you learned a lot from them. What was the next step?
The next step was start to be a consultant, because people start to ask me, little things and step by step.
So why were suddenly people getting interested in organic and biodynamic? And which year are we talking? Was this 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Yes, between 10 and 15 years ago, we were talking about, Tuscany mostly, then Chianti Classico area, and no, Tuscany in general, honestly. Then I restarted in Tuscany, where I moved 18 years ago. And so I started a consultant estate in Tuscany, little by little, out of Tuscany, out of Italy, blah, blah, blah.
But were people interested in organics then because they were worried about pesticides? Or were they interested in organics and biodynamics because they felt it would make better quality? Or were they interested in organics and biodynamics because maybe the trend for, say, the super Tuscan wines, these French grapes that didn't always work very well in a hot Tuscan climate, weren't really delivering what they wanted? What do you think people's motivations were?
In my case, I think that there was more drastic, because I never touch organic agriculture. And I switch from the conventional, from my education, to biodynamic.
Straight away, didn't go for organic at all.
No, for me it's not an option.
Why not?
Because, you know, just don't use poison. It's better than nothing, but it's not enough. And so I don't want to spend my life, because it's cost a lot of sacrifice working and traveling around the world, just to don't use pesticide. I won't really be involved in the creation of something better about, you know, vitality of the soil, quality food, quality process, all maintenance system. And so I'm really interested on that.
Yeah, I always describe what you're saying about organics is about what you don't do. Yeah. I don't spray this, I don't spray that. And biodynamics is about what you do do, which is I do spray cow manure sprays, I do spray, I use dandelion, horsetail and various plants.
It's taking care, the concept. The big difference for me is really taking care of the piece of land. Whether if you grow vines, you're making wine, you make apricots, apricots or whatever. But it's not really enough, just don't use poison, because we have any sort of poison also about, you know, on the air, on the water and whatever. Then we really, in my opinion, need to create fertility, create more vitality and biodiversity. And we have some tools specific in biodynamic agriculture, you know, the same that you mentioned it now.
So what about this idea of a biodynamic vineyard should try and become a self-sustaining organism, to try and be as self-sufficient as possible in terms of fertility for compost, for example?
Yeah, yeah. We have some typical tools in biodynamic, as the compost that you named, otherwise, but we really start from taking care of the soil. And with the soil, we start to work with eliminating herbicides and whatever, and introducing green manure, for example.
So green manure, cover crops?
Yeah, cover crops, and different sort of cover crops, studying, depending, you know, the needs of the soil, the needs of the vineyards and whatever.
Okay, I'll give you an example of cover crops. So I'm on, say, a very fertile soil.
Yeah.
Say I'm in the low part of the valley, and my vines are very vigorous, and I always have problems with, say, botrytis and things like that. What are you going to suggest I do as I sow between my vine rows as a cover crop?
In this example, we work with a permanent cover crop.
A permanent one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, as a cereal, and even, you know, the polyannual herbs, that's really aggressive herbs, able to calm.
And they to keep suck out the energy of the soil.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. In terms of water, nutrients, and whatever. And so we is a powerful tool in order to maintain the low vigor.
So you're saying the cover crop is like a pump. It sort of pumps
absolutely
water out of the soil.
Yeah, yep.
As it grows, it obviously needs water to live, and then that evaporates as its shoots
make
grow.
It competition with vines, that is, you know, the goal.
So then you reduce it's like a break. You're slowing down the vine and making
absolutely
it less vigorous.
Yeah,
all right, now I've got a vineyard on the top of a hill.
Yeah.
Say 600 meters in Chianti Classico, very luminous, very bright, a lot of solar radiation, steep slopes, galestro soil, free draining, and you come along with your weird biodynamic ideas. Oh, I'm going to start sowing cover grass. I mean, no way you're going to kill my vineyard. What are you going to sow there?
Yeah, that's what I call oxidative soil. It's a really high consumption soil in order of organic matter. So we need to use all our best strategy to grow organic matter on this soil, and starting by green manures or cover crops with leguminose, with all plants that's bringing nitrogens into the soil.
So they're legumes. Legumes suck nitrogen out of the atmosphere and they release them into the soil via their roots. So that's a food source. Yep.
Everybody knows a peas.
Peas
is an example of
peas and beans.
Peas and beans, exactly, is a popular example about leguminose. We use a lot of 500 preparations.
So just the 500 is the horn manure preparation that's used in biodynamics, which is a soil spray made of fermented cow manure, which is full of microorganisms and life.
Perfect. And then we use, you know, tilling system soil. We might also give some organic manure, you know, animal manure. And so we use also composting technique. We try to compost all part of the vineyard that we don't use in making wine. We just use a little part of the crop producing wine because we drink a juice. We never forgot.
So you mean you're recycling the seeds and pips which come out of the winery?
Seeds, peppers, and wood, which we have a particular machine who chop.
So basically this is the prunings
the
that Adriana's talking about.
Yeah.
In the winter,
yeah,
obviously you prune the vines and you can chop them up. Because obviously it's little bits of wood, which are full of carbon and other nutrients, and you chop those up. And what makes sense there is that vines used to grow, they originated in the edge of the forest. And the idea is that this woody material creates a microbiological balance that makes the vine feel that she's back in the forest, and so she's incredibly happy.
You're right. Yeah, that's exactly that. And we process that in a compost technique following some biodynamic
ideas
and inoculating with biodynamic preparation and blah, blah, blah. And so we take that, and after we add this with organic manure, with organic compost to the soil when the soil is really poor, in addition to the other technique that we already use.
So by composting everything, what Adriana is saying is that you're putting soil back into the soil, because obviously the wood and all the rest of it that grew actually did come from the soil. So you're actually putting that back, and the idea is that you're keeping the farm gate closed.
Yep.
And you're not buying in fertility, say, in a plastic sack with fertilizers. You're closing the farm gate and you're using your terroir to enrich your terroir.
Exactly. And otherwise, when we have not enough resourcing in our estate, we try to make some alliance with all other neighbors. Maybe that they are, the producer of milk, why not? On the other race, they raise other animals.
So they'll have cows that produce lovely manure, which is good for composting.
Because the organism that the farming organism that we have in our mind, it doesn't need to be the same with the
boundary.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. And so we can really make a nice alliance with other producers and make a big organism, agricultural organism, that's the word.
So what Adriano is saying is in the idea of biodynamics, is you're trying to create a self-sustaining living organism. So if you have a vineyard and you've only got 4 hectares, just so your whole vineyard is, your landowning is say 4 hectares, and 3.8 of that is vineyard, you really don't have a lot of space to have cows and that would produce manure for fertility. So what Adriano is saying is if your neighbours have cows, you can maybe use some of their manure and you can give them some wine in return, and you may have a cereal farmer down the road as well, and he lacks a bit of manure and he can give some grain or some other seeds that he's growing. And this is a really revolutionary but incredibly sensible idea that farming, we've become totally lost and becoming very individual, and also in wine growing, this idea of terroir, my site is better than yours. Leaning across the fence and talking to your neighbours is absolutely fundamental for good organic and biodynamic management. Sorry, I just had to say that, but that's what Adriano was saying, and it's so rare to see and hear that. You know, in Tuscany, where people are said to be the Tuscans are quite tough, and Italians are very individualistic, which is a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong; that's the beauty of Italy. But leaning over the fence and doing what Adriano is doing and encouraging farmers to do is revolutionary. Trust me, folks, it is. Okay, next. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. And then, that is the agricultural organisms was a marvelous stuff that Steiner gave to us, and so that's more or less the technique that we can use for starting to improving the function of the soil when one soil is really poor and oxidative. So
you make it sound so simple, but I work as a consultant.
It's not.
What are the difficulties? Is it people management? Is it finance? Is it people feeling that oh my God, this biodynamic guy is going to destroy the farm in 2 seconds? What are the concerns that people raise with you? But
normally, when somebody thinks that the biodynamic is going to destroy the farms, doesn't go me, and so that is easy. No, in my opinion, the human factor is more difficult to manage, because sometimes you can really not manage that. And because the technique, the agricultural technique, the biodynamic technique in wine cellar, in the vineyard, after a while, you manage little by little that. But the human factor is the more challenging one on the estate, because you have to to feel what's happened when you enter in a farm in the morning. For me, the first challenge of the day is feeling what is on the air.
And so you're sensing their fear or their optimism or their...
Yeah, and that is not just a overly romantic stuff. It's dramatically technical stuff, because in one regard, you should be able to understand if there is something that you have to catch. And after that, work with that or work on that for the rest of the day.
It's a bit like being a manager of a sports team, like a football team or a cricket team. The psychology of the tractor driver, for example, will be totally different to the psychology of the enologist. Will be different to the psychology of the owner of the estate.
Oh, yeah.
So the owner of the estate may want one thing, and the workers are afraid. They think, God, if we go biodynamic, we're gonna go out of business, and I'm gonna lose my job. I have a mortgage. I have 2 kids, and that's why. People management is so critical. It's not just about knowing your biodynamics and your lunar cycles. It's about psychology, isn't it?
And I think the more talking, the other stuff is to have a result. Because after a while, you can blah, blah, blah for years, for years and years, and talk and talk and talk. But the owner, the director, everyone want to see some kind of result. And so they need, and I need, first of all, to see that soil change, product change, wine change, and also the social part of the estate change. And so I think that in a couple of years, my, you know, my time is between 2 and 3 years. I need to see maybe more than something. I say something, or when I say something, I say really something. And so we need to touch, to feel, and to eat and drink something different than before.
Yeah, you need to get results, basically.
Absolutely, no way.
So how, I mean, you're working with some large estates, some very large estates in Tuscany and elsewhere. Is it easier working with a small estate, or is it easier working with a big estate?
That's really different. And sometimes it's really easier work with a big one because, you know, everything is well, you know, you can organize our job properly. And then sometimes it can be also more difficult to work with a small estate because I remember every time that, you know, a small producer is a producer, father, husband, and many other stuff. And so he has not time to manage at the best all that, you know, all the day. And so that, but joke aside, it really depends. It really depends. Is the size doesn't describe so much about, you know, the difficulties of my job.
But is it easier working with, when you walk into an estate, for example, so a small estate may be family owned.
Yeah.
So the tractor driver, the winemaker, yeah, the invoice sender, the publicity person is one person.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a bigger estate, you'll have a vineyard manager who's an employee, a sales manager who is an employee, and obviously then an owner at the top. Does that make it easier that you've got staff that have a delegated jobs that you can deal with rather than, say, a family person who has like 15 different titles?
It's really depending on my opinions in how deeper the person want to be involved in the process. It's really depending on that, because sometimes you can really find some director that is so passionate about that, and that is, you know, is a dream work with people like that. And sometimes you can find a small owner that is completely fanatic about my job and and so we can sometimes I should calm people because maybe they are more fanatic than me.
It's interesting you say you should calm. I know exactly what you're saying. You have some wine growers that want to be 150% biodynamic within 2 minutes, and and you got to say, hey, calm down.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, people call you and they say, I want to start a biodynamic by the horse. Okay, please, don't call me. We can have all the horses in a few years, but
not today,
even not tomorrow. And so in this case, you have to make a priority. You have to be, in my opinion, stay really technical with a nice vision so you can dream, but with the feet on the ground.
Yeah, that's very, very well put. I think you're right. It's step by step, isn't it?
Yeah.
And keeping people's expectations realistic.
Yeah, and sometimes you can really go very fast. If you are realistic, you can go faster sometimes than you are a dreamer.
So if I have a really heavily conventional vineyard, no matter what the size, how many years... I know the figure I ascribe in my mind. How many years would it take to turn it around to your satisfaction so that the wines really change and the vineyard almost starts to regulate itself?
If you're talking about really starting, see something, I think in between 2 and 3 years.
Okay.
Definitely.
So that's when you first really start seeing the changes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, year three
and
normally.
If we want to pretend to have a, you know, stable change and, you know, appreciate the wine change, the style of wine, it's more in the between 5 and 7 years.
I always say about 7 years.
That makes sense.
Yeah, year two is the hard year, because in year one the vines have still got lots of soluble fertilizers to be like, hey, this is okay, we got this weird Zargo guy who's turned up and doing all this weird biodynamic shit, but we're okay. In year two, like, fuck, where's the food?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the hard, and if you get a difficult season in year two, that's the tricky moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how do you prepare for that? I mean, that, you know, that that's coming year two when the vines are like, they know something has changed. Do you do anything extra special in year two, or do you just say, no, this is, we just got to get through? It's like a drug addict that's in detox. It just get them through that difficult period. If you get them through that period, then we know that we've got a real chance of converting the estate.
Yeah, it's really depending by the cases, but what I normally do is try to involve as much as possible people that I work with. Listen guy, we are starting a process that, you know, I know a little bit better than you, but it's a vital, it's a natural process that we cannot say in advance what's happening in a couple of months, even 1 year. And try also to make, you know, really convincing the producer that even the conventional producer, they are not completely sure that the crop, it will be the same every year. And that's the reason, that's a realistic perception, because we can see how many conventional producers reaching in the organic or the even biodynamic agriculture. Because if you are talking with a honest conventional agriculture, they will say to you that, you know, they have a huge problem and there's no other solution, because chemical, you know, they just change molecules.
They just change the brand of the spray they're using. But they have, like, you're talking about disease resistance to pesticides.
Exactly. And the costs, you know, increase every year. And the people around your farm, you know, the population doesn't want that. And the market, even the restrictions about, you know,
using pesticides are getting stronger, aren't they?
Exactly. It's such a huge, luckily, problem for the conventional farm that they start to thinking about that, reflecting about that. And so, and they switch in organic and biodynamic agriculture, honestly, also just about for that, because it's starting to be, you know, more and more difficult.
Yeah, it's much harder to say that biodynamics or organics doesn't work. I mean, you know, 10-12% of Italy, France, Spain, Germany, Austria are all successful. 90%, 99% end up successful economically and also critically. It's very hard to say it doesn't work.
That is really hard. We can say that it's not perfect.
Yeah, no system is, but...
No, we have, you know, some problem that we have no solution for that. But as everybody, because I was in the other, you know, kind of agriculture with the chemical, conventional, or integrate...
Integrated, which is IPM, which is low input conventional agriculture, trying to get rid of some of the harder sprays. But basically, you're not smoking 20 cigarettes a day, you're down to 5, but you're still smoking.
But you accept that smoking is dangerous anyway.
Yeah, you accept smoking is dangerous. We're going to get such a bug. We're going to have so many people writing in saying, oh, you were so rude about conventional farming with that Sargo guy. Anyway, so what about the elephant in the room, which is climate change? Is biodynamic viticulture and agriculture a buffer against climate change, or is it just as useless as any other system?
Oh, hard to say, because it's a huge challenge that we have in front of us. And, you know, in 2018, once again, we are in another exceptional harvest and kind of season.
Yeah, it's been very wet so far. We had sun and then lots and lots and lots and lots of rain, which is very unusual.
But we are talking about exceptional, you know, season on the last, that's pretty kind of 10 years. Surely within 7 and 8 years, every season is exceptional. So what we can do about that? Don't use herbicide, don't use chemical stuff, is a huge help for the soil system, because we don't kill organic matter, and organic matter is the only part of the soil that can absorb the water in excess, and that can keep the water in case of stress, that hydric stress.
So it's like a sponge, basically. So when
Absolutely.
It rains, you want the rain to stay in your vineyard and not erode your soil away. And so when it's hot, which we get these very hot periods, you have some reserves in the soil.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You have so, you know, tough rain when raining, and we need to prepare our soil against the erosions. There's no way conventional agriculture has not tools to do that. The only one is organic, but drastically better biodynamic agriculture, because we have, you know, cover crops, organic matter we can grow on the soil with preparation, we can put on the soil with the 500 and the compost and whatever. And so that's for sure. Don't kill the soil is the first help that we can have for the climate change. And after that, we know that climate change are really powerful, and I don't know if we'll be able to manage that, but we will discover.
So just to quickly remind everybody, the 500 is the horn manure 500, which is cow manure, varied in a cow horn for 6 months. And when you spray it, you dilute that in water, you dig it up, not the horn, the contents of the horn, which is the cow manure, has become very earthy, and you dilute it in water and aerate it a bit, and you spread on the soil. The idea is provides lots of microorganisms, and they are the ones that create tiny little holes in the soil, which makes the soil spongy, which is what Adriano says. So when it does rain, we get these sort of Brazilian-style downpours now, rather than seeing your vineyard sort of erode away very quickly in a couple of hours. And the idea is that these... that's having this porous living soil is more spongy, so you get less erosion, and means you keep your soil, because there is no soil shop, right? There's no like Amazon.com.
No, no way.
I'd like 750,000 tons of Galestro, please, from my Chianti vineyard. Amazon goes, I'm sorry, guys, we're out of Galestro. We just don't have enough, I'm afraid. There's a big run on Galestro recently.
Yeah, that's all right.
What are you doing in terms of pruning and canopy management, just basic viticulture, to deal with some of these climatic extremities, like either very, very hot, dry weather or incredibly rainy, short bursts? pests. What are you doing in terms of pruning and canopy management?
It's a canopy management. We try to keep as much as possible the leaves in case of really, you know, hot season, as it can be 2017, or even maybe also 2018, we will see. But aside that, we try to follow the personality of each season on the vineyard. And this is no way. And so we try to be really flexible about canopy system, canopy management,
soil management.
And so we try to don't, and I try, and it's a big challenge for my mind, first of all, because, you know, it's really easy to have some idea and keep the idea for every year.
Yeah, like a water recipe.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not necessary anymore. It's even dangerous. My personal challenge is to be changing every year, thinking different for every vineyards, for every variety, for every canopy management, for every years, and yeah.
That makes your job far more interesting. You've got to really think, don't you?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Because you do have consultants that literally have one recipe. We won't name names, yeah. But winemaking, for example. I've worked for several very well-known consultants without naming them, and it's just the same recipe for everything, you know. That was a while ago, to be honest. I'm sure things have changed, but it's nice to hear that you're saying that you're much more creative now, aren't you? You have to be much more creative as a consultant.
Yes, I think it's a really nice part of my job to be creative, and it's a kind of surviving also kit that you have in your pocket, because it's no way, because you need to create solutions and ideas and sharing this doubt you have with different people in different climate, in different varieties. And if I think that yesterday was, you know, for example, the North Italy in Friuli, and after that I was in Bologna, and this morning I'm in Montalcino, so I have to think that every time that on this place, I'm on this place, that I'm really
like you're the vineyard.
Yes, I really need a high presence, you know, the real presence, mind, body, soul, and whatever, you know, to see what's happening around me when I park my car, and, you know, as I say, breathe the air. And
you see the birds, what's going on.
Yeah, why not? Yep. Yeah, just little details and to help you to stay on the place, to stay on the, you know the people. I'm friends with most of the people that I work with, produce, and it is also necessary because I need to be in touch with the family, with the old people, or the team. I work, you know, on the same level with team and owner. Doesn't, you know, it's not a different for me. Yeah, it's equal. Yeah, because I need to feel what's happened in the mind also the people that doing the stuff, because finally sometimes they're just the workers doing the, you know, something, the pruning preparation, racking wine and whatever, also about selling wine. I need for the market people see what's happened when you are selling these wines, what is the perception of the clients, and that's helped me to understand what's happened on the bottle.
It's good to hear also a consultant. I mean, I'm you're not the only one, but you know, but ultimately you don't have a job unless the wine sells.
Yeah,
you know, we always talk about environmental sustainability, but economic sustainability is always your starting point. It sounds silly saying that, sounds very money driven way of thinking about things, but it's true that if you make a screw up in the vineyard and the soil erodes because you choose a bad cover crop, then there's no wine that year, and that's an economic disaster.
Absolutely, then you have to take in charge, you know, the sustainability, as you say, in the all levels. If you see that, you know, a farmer is doing something really, really bad about economical or financial items, you should, you know, you should interact with him in order to say, listen, consider maybe is not correct.
It's that can be quite hard wrong. Though, can't it?
Yeah.
When it comes to budgets and money and...
I work with the budget of with farmers, because they know that I'm used to see different budget, and so I need to share also this part of my job, because otherwise if you have not economical sustainability, there's no way to making, you know, wine by dynamic cows and even autosis.
Yeah, environmental sustainability depends on economic sustainability.
Absolutely no way. No way, especially now. There's always a high pressure about that.
So you're optimistic about the future, both personally and generally?
Absolutely, yes.
Do you think we can change climate change around with better farming? Because, I mean, one of the huge contributors of greenhouse gases is farming.
Yes, I think that we have to change human brain for, you know, to working on the climate changing. And so I'm working on that.
Yeah, well, you're not alone, you'll struggle. But maybe if there are, you know, a few thousand,
I try
billion,
at least,
million
okay.
like yeah. you, then... No. I think what you're saying is... I mean, I think exactly the same as you. I think the more carbon we can put back in the soil, the more likely it is that we've got a chance of addressing climate change, because ultimately there are other greenhouse gases out there, but methane, for example, which is also not a great one. But, you know, the farming community, we all have to eat, so we all depend on farming. There isn't anybody in the world, it can be whatever religion you are or colour or creed, whatever. We all do two things a day. We eat and we shit. And eating is the way that we can, what we eat and what we drink is the way that we can maybe turn climate change around.
Yeah, that's right. It's the most impacting step that we can do, taking care about our, you know, nutrition.
Yeah,
personal nutrition, because it's the most impacting
thing that has the biggest impact. I mean, if you don't ever work as a consultant again, you could easily be like a top model. Adriano is a very tall, good-looking lad. He's got like suntan, not clean shaven, a like a loose, baggy green t-shirt. And so you could also like maybe the sexy side of biodynamics, because in biodynamics we just think of old wizened men with their little seedling calendars looking at the lunar cycles. And you're not. You've got a mobile phone. You even have a car. You didn't arrive on a donkey. I was quite surprised. So you're very forward thinking and very outward looking and very much connected with economics. Just want to say thanks to my guest today, Adriano Zaga. We could literally talk for hours, but we don't want to bore you. I will get you back. Maybe next time we can do an interview with you actually in the field.
Yeah, why not? It's a nice idea. It's really a pleasure for me. Yeah,
and then we can get some of the nitty gritty of the actual biodynamic stuff and all the weirdy beardy stuff that you do.
And we can smell the soy bite podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to get a smellometer. That's not too expensive, and also microbial measure as well, so we can see that your whole manure really does contain all the microorganisms that you said as Adriano Zago, biodynamic consultant. Thanks very much for coming on the Italian Wine Podcast today. It's been a privilege talking to you, especially for me as a biodynamic Taliban. It's nice to meet a fellow biodynamic Taliban, but hopefully, folks, if you're listening at home, everything that Adriano has said is common sense. That's the bottom line. And if you want good wine, you need to have healthy vineyards, full stop. Thanks for listening. Ciao.
Thank you, Martin.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.